Shortly after graduating high school and long before he became one of our great literary lions, Langston Hughes boarded a train in the Midwest bound for Mexico. Early in that journey, the train crossed the Mississippi River just outside of St. Louis. Hughes later recounted how, just as he was crossing the river, the muse paid him a visit. He began penning lines that would in time become one of his best known poems. I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. Hughes' poem may have been inspired by a literal river crossing, but it outruns the banks of that one river. I bathed in the Euphrates, he added. I built my hut near the Congo. I looked upon the Nile. I heard the singing of the Mississippi. In his poetic snapshot, the Negro speaks of rivers. Hughes locates himself in the flow of rivers long past, understands himself as someone shaped by the ways in which his life is part of the flow of his forebears. And it is in that deep, mystical, spiritual sense that he affirms, "My soul has grown deep like the rivers." When in 1961 Universalists consolidated with Unitarians, they sang a hymn on that day in Boston Symphony Hall with similar fluvial imagery. As tranquil streams that meet and merge and flow as one to seek the sea, our kindred fellowships unite to build a church that shall be free. It was the recognition that we too have a deep history, that we too are shaped by the long-running waters of our shared faith. If you trace the living river of our liberating religion back to its headwaters in this country, and even to historical precedents well before that, you'll recognize how our collective souls have grown deep like these rivers. We're shaped still by what those early Universalists and Unitarians held dear, by the long and deep stream of faith, that is, trust, still in us. Venture back upstream to the Murrays of Universalism, Judith and John, and their 18th century message. Go out into the highways and the byways of America, your new country. Give the people something of your new vision. Give them not hell, but hope. And so it was from the outset, a faith in human goodness and in abiding divine love. Life need not be lived in fear. Life, as our Universalist forebear Hosea Ballou had it, life truly is about a personal and a collective pursuit of happiness. They also named at the outset a faith that denounced as inconsistent with the union of the human race, the holding of any part of our fellow creatures in bondage. Our faith from its beginnings had social implications, had a way of addressing the social ills of its time. We're buoyed yet by this legacy of love, one of the primary tributaries feeding the stream of our faith. Even before our founding as Unitarians in this country, William Ellery Channing espoused an article of faith that is still held with devotion among us. Standing before a liberal Christian congregation in May of 1819, he declared unflinchingly his faith in reason. Religion, he insisted, must be interpreted by reason, by rational beings in harmony with the laws of nature. Our forebears' faith in reason is a significant stream that is still in us and we in it. We never ask for the acceptance of that which defies reason. We never insist that entrance here requires a suspension of our standing as rational beings. What's more, in our ready embrace of reason, we recognize the plurality of truth. We don't think truth comes in one fixed form. We aren't threatened by a multiplicity of truths. Reason reminds us to keep our minds open, to consider the truth in forms that may even surprise us. We are buoyed yet by this legacy of reason, one of the primary tributaries feeding the stream of our faith. As their separate religious expressions developed, for all of their differences, Universalists and Unitarians agreed on one profound element of faith. Religion is not about some ethereal domain, a preparation for the hereafter, or even that which transpires only in the secret souls of private persons. Religion, for our religious forebears, had to do with how we live our lives, how we engage with the challenges of our times. From Joseph Tuckerman's early efforts on issues of poverty, housing, incarceration, inequality, the most faith-filled expanded ever broader. Abolitionists, suffragettes, public education advocates, public health advocates, advocates for a responsible criminal justice system. There were pacifists. There were socialists. There were women and men calling for the equality of the sexes and respect for women's full and complete rights. Some put it this way, our faith is not based on creeds, but on deeds. And we are most certainly buoyed yet by this legacy of social concern, one of the primary tributaries feeding the stream of our faith. Like Langston Hughes, we should pause in our passage from time to time and look back upstream to where we have come from. Faith has had deep meaning. Faith has deep meaning yet. We declare it each time we affirm our faith, that there are those aspects of life that we trust deeply. Yes, we have been, we are, and may it be so that we remain people of faith. People of faith. And people of doubt. Unitarian Universalist faith and Unitarian Universalist doubt are the twin streams feeding the river of our religion. In the robust commitment to reason and our deep engagement with life, doubt, mistrust, has played an important, essential role. We recognize the necessity to continue to ask, scrutinize, question, not so that we might revel in or aggrandize confusion, but as a means to find our way to an even deeper faith. For quite some time here and in our larger faith, we have imagined that nothing escapes the scrutiny of our doubts. We have a claim that like no other religious tradition, we here are invited into the full flush of our doubts, neither denying nor turning away from the very deepest sources of our mistrust. It may then surprise you today to hear me say, I don't think we've doubted enough. Oh, to be sure, we've questioned the content of faith, our own and others. We, many of us, have rejected the religion of our childhood or adolescence. We've stood here in this pulpit or downstairs in our Credo series and announced openly that we have more questions than answers. And yet for all of that, despite a long stream of doubt that infuses our own, we simply haven't doubted enough. You see, we have been so reflective of, so representative of, a life of privilege set in an American dream espoused so often by those from within our own number. We've claimed with pride the important and the powerful who came from among us. As a former moderator of our denomination so succinctly puts it, what I'd like for our people to know is that if there is a candidate for the great American religion, it is us. The great American religion. A religion of rugged individuals emboldened by their own power and privileged positions. So often driven by good intentions, so often embodying not justice, but charity. A way of acting that assures radical inequality will remain in place. How often have we paused to doubt that dream, the great American dream? How often have we stopped to ask if perhaps our view of things is unduly skewed by the immensity of our privilege? How often have we been willing to wonder how a religion with such impressively stated claims can remain so devoid of the diversity we claim to want, and so overwhelmingly representative of the clearest examples of the status quo? Maybe, just maybe, we haven't doubted enough. Our community is not now divided. Our community is fractured. I heard it again this week. You may not see it in our streets, but I assure you the deep discontent has not gone away. And I continue to wonder, what is my role in this time? What is our role in this time? Will we be those with too much faith? Faith in the system. Faith in the powers that be. Faith in a political process offering, at best, cautious moderation. Faith in a myth of upward mobility we now know is simply not the case in this town. Do we have too much faith? Have we been afraid to really doubt? Doubt if our perspective is accurate. Doubt if the reports we are hearing are truthful. Doubt if our leaders are being honest. Doubt if the best we can do is more years of cautious centrism. I'm convinced that these times call for doubt. Deep, wrenching, soul-searching doubt. A doubt that we have resisted. Casey Gerald is a young, brilliant Yale and Harvard Business School grad, an African-American who has taken to the TED stage to ask an important question. Will the American dream survive another generation? in a way that has gotten my attention and will not let me go. I am hearing again and again what Gerald calls his gospel of doubt. Casey Gerald asserts, it simply is not true to say we live in an age of disbelief. No, we believe, he says, just as much as any time that came before. Some of us may believe in the prophecy of Brené Brown or Tony Robbins. We may believe in the Bible of the New Yorker or the Harvard Business Review. We desperately want to believe. We need to believe. We speak in the tongues of charismatic leaders who promise to solve all of our problems. We see suffering as a necessary act. It's a necessary act of the capitalism that is our God. We take the text of technological progress to be infallible truth. And we hardly realize the human price we pay when we fail to question one brick because we fear it might shake our whole foundation. Casey Gerald insists, if you are disturbed by the unconscionable things that we have come to accept, then it must be questioning time. I have and I offer, he says, a gospel of doubt. The gospel of doubt, he explains, does not ask that you stop believing. It asks that you believe a new thing, that it is possible not to believe. It's possible the answers we have are wrong. It's possible the questions themselves are wrong. The gospel of doubt means that it is possible. Brace yourself. It's possible that we are wrong. He continues, it raises the question, why? Why? Why, with all the power that we hold in our hands, why are people still suffering so badly? Casey Gerald is too impassioned to indulge in cynicism or despair. So he assures us, this doubt, it fuels me. It gives me hope. That when our troubles overwhelm us, when the path laid out for us seems to lead to our demise, when our healers bring no comfort to our wounds, it will not be our blind faith. No, it will be our humble doubt. It shines a little light into the darkness of our lives and into our world and lets us raise our voices to whisper or to shout or to say simply, there must be another way. Oh, what a threat that is. To all who have investments in the current way of it, the risk is that we will have to change. The risk is that we may even have to transform. The risk is that our whole social structure may have to transform. And that may require both a wellspring of faith and a deep reservoir of doubt, the likes of which we have never seen within this little religion of ours. The temptation for us as we face our own ambitious vision will be that we will have neither the faith nor the doubt, neither the flowing faith of our boldest forebears nor the doubts that we need now to roll down like waters. No one, said that ancient Greek Heraclitus, no one steps into the same river twice. The flow forever continues. The stream forever seeks the sea. Things will not, because they cannot, stay the same. I think that's what he meant. That newly announced Nobel laureate, when he wrote now so long ago, come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming, or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing. In an earlier time of unrest, he'd write, don't criticize what you can't understand. Don't criticize what you can't understand. In a time when the foundations are shaking, the chorus comes back to people of not nearly enough faith and not nearly enough doubt. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one. If you can't lend a hand, get out of the new one. If you can't lend a hand, for the times, they are changing.